Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, it is that time. That's right, we are back. It's the BBP, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski. Now, I hope our people liked my new intro that I made. I didn't even tell you, Jim, I made a new intro.
No.
But you know, you down with BBP, it just feels like it's a T-shirt waiting to be made. Maybe we can get bumper down with BBP. You down with BBP bumper stickers?
I think that would
for
work.
Our people out there, I did have someone send me a picture this week that somewhere in Iceland there was a BBP reference, and he was like, "Man, I think you guys are going international here."
The team is going international. We literally are going international.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, but we knew
in
that.
October, right?
But yeah, so I hope people like the new open. Excited to hit them with the old school Naughty by Nature. you got to shake it up. Every year is a new year. In this way of our saying, hey, it's a new year, so here we go. We got all kinds of good stuff for you today. It's official. We call this the training camp preview, I guess.
Yeah.
We had the mock turtle soup yesterday, so we're fueled up.
Fueled up.
Well, sort of. One of us is fueled off mock turtle soup. The other one discarded it and didn't eat any.
No.
It's like you don't like chewing calf brain.
I don't like chewing soup, Paul. I don't.
You ever had a good foot? Sometimes you gotta have a good calf foot.
I was gonna say no.
No,
I don't think I've ever had a good foot.
That's fair. Not many have. Well, anyway, let me run down a little bit for what we're gonna be getting to here in our training camp preview BBP. Vontaze Burfict, you'll be shocked to hear, is a topic of conversation. We're gonna talk a lot about that. You'll hear from Marvin Lewis and Paul Gunther about him, including a little bit of news from Marvin Lewis about that. We'll get into that in a little bit more. I think people were surprised to hear that he will not be playing in preseason games this year. So we'll dive headfirst into that. I think we kind of want to talk a little bit also about Marvin Lewis and Mike Brown as a relationship and as it's this time, you know, it's one of the two times a year where Mike comes out and talk, other times at the owners' meetings.
Right.
And so when you hear from them, you continue to learn. I think we know what they are now, but it's just such an interesting dynamic that's come. It really does define the entire organization. And I think it's interesting to dive into what that is, where that comes from, and maybe where Mike stands as far as being treated unfairly or fairly in this town.
Right.
There's a whole lot of history
when
you start digging through those feelings. But, you know, I think that's interesting to talk about there.
Yeah, it was an interesting time because perception did come up. And I think, Paul, part of it is because Mike is going to be 81 in August. And he even admitted, he's like, look, I don't know how many shots – we got left, and I interpreted that as how many shots I have left.
I have left, yeah.
And although he did say, you know, he really couldn't say if he'd appreciate a Super Bowl now as opposed to maybe if they won in 88 or 82. But, it is interesting. He says he'll never be beloved. I would argue against that because I think anytime you win a championship, perceptions go 180, right? but until that point,
an interesting point of the conversation because
I think there is a portion of this city that even if they won the Super Bowl would not give him the credit, so he wouldn't be beloved. We're going to jump into that later. That's a little teaser for what we're going to get to later.
Teaser.
That's right. We're in the biz. We're going to take a look at some things that we're going to be watching for as camp gets started. Camp starts on Friday, the 29th, and we'll be off and going. First pads practice should be Monday, I believe. We'll talk about what we're going to be looking for as camp gets going. We hope that you guys will come down to the fields next to Paul Brown Stadium. If you see us, say hello. Give us a BBP shout out.
Yeah.
Dap. Don't dab at us. We don't like that.
No.
Anti-dab. I hope we're all anti-dab at this point.
I might dab on you.
Oh, don't dab on anybody.
Wow.
Don't do it. Just don't do it.
Just don't do it.
All right, so that's what we're going to get to. And we're going to have what is making Jim mad moment of the week. This is going to be a new segment for us every single week this year because there's always something that's got you mad. And I don't know if our listeners really understand.
No, I don't think they do.
How mad you get sometimes. Yeah. Typically, it's just because you're awake and it's morning.
Yeah, that's part of it.
But I think this is a good opportunity every week for us to just check in with Jim and see what's making him mad. We will get to that in a little bit. First, let's start off where we said we were going to start off. Let's start off with Vontaze Perfect. Yeah. So Marvin Lewis comes out and says at Mock Turtle Soup Fest that Vontaze Burfict is not going to play in any of the preseason games. He wants to keep him healthy. It's just that much more important that he stays healthy. I don't know that this is surprising news. I don't know that it's crazy. But I was surprised to hear it just because I think we were all under the assumption that he's healthy.
Right.
So why would he have any more risk than anybody else, unless we're still worried about the microfracture, and that makes sense. Why push a guy who's had microfracture surgery? But we're also only talking about probably a series, a game. How, to definitively say before the preseason even starts, he's not going to play in any games is just sort of, I don't know. It's uncharacteristic of Marvin.
Yeah, it was very interesting because it made me think of a couple things. One, you mentioned the microfracture. It's like, well, maybe when you look at Vontaze's knee or knees or whatever, they're 8 years older than his age. And it's one of those things where you almost have to manage him in a way that you would manage Carlos Dansby, just to throw it out there, you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and if you want to have some fun with it, you could say, look, you're keeping him off the field not only to protect his legs, which what does that mean? Would one of these opponents take a shot at him? He's already suspended for 3 games. He can't really have any more questionable hits. Now, granted, he's still got to play week 4, but you know what I mean? Like, so it just opened up a whole just range of things to talk about or wonder, and it was just so kind of flippant from Marvin, which is, again, as you said, is odd and interesting and, you know, curious to see. I mean, hopefully we'll find out more in this coming week between.
Yeah, certainly we're gonna look further into it and try to find out some of what the real reasoning is behind it. I think those of us that were, there was a few of us that were there, we'll play some of that audio for you later, were just sort of taken aback to the point, shocked to hear it, that didn't even think to go, the topic just sort of moved on. It was
right.
I had to go back after we were done talking to him. I'm like, I gotta listen to that again a couple more times, and I had to check with everybody. But everybody was there. He did say that. Right? I mean, it was clear. He did say that, right? Yeah, he absolutely. That's exactly what he said. Is I'm not playing him in my opinion, I'm not playing him in preseason games. He will practice some. Obviously, he wasn't starting the year on PUP or anything like that.
Right.
But he's going to hold him off on that, too.
Yeah, that's the other interesting thing is, because, you know, Marvin doesn't like to talk about injuries and whatnot, but, you know, and maybe that was, again, fascinating. You know, 55's on the sidelines to start camp, and he's not, but then again, 6 weeks of PUP, practiced one game, and then played 35 snaps in Pittsburgh.
This is true.
So, you know what I mean? He's just.
You don't know, but I just, you know, it also took him a long time to get going last year. If the microfracture is a concern, and maybe that's what it is. I mean, let's just keep it to the fewest amount of times that he has to go out there
right.
and use that knee.
Right.
Is how you know if he's got 36 games in him, you certainly don't want to be wasting those in practice or in preseason. So if that and this is speculating, we don't know that at all. I don't know. I mean, Marvin might be and the doctors might be the only ones that do know that.
Right.
But you can start to wonder that when you hear things like this. I just was kind of surprised about it. So there's a couple of things there. I want to get to what Marvin said to us in that part of the conversation. I also want to get to defensive coordinator Paul Gunther talking about Vontaze Burfict and his emotions and managing his emotions. This is a topic we've sort of dipped into a little bit over the course of this offseason, but I think it's going to be really important as he goes forward this year. So I want to bring some of that, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how the Bengals are going to need to manage Vontaze Burfict, not talking health-wise.
Right.
So here's head coach Marvin Lewis and then defensive coordinator Paul Gunther.
One thing that does carry over is Vontaze's suspension. Have you seen a difference in him this spring, this summer?
I think Vontaze will be a very, very good football player once he gets back out to playing, you know, football games. So, you know, he continues to be a great mentor for the defensive players, for the young players. He's such an extension of the coaching staff as far as the scheme and everything that way. That's what he brings. You know, I kept him on the sideline as much as I could, every day I could during the offseason. I'm going to do the same thing this training camp. And there's no reason for us to risk him getting hurt. But it's hard because he's so competitive for me to continue to hold him back. You know, one day he gets it, the next day he wants to fight me on it. And that's it. But there's just no reason for us to expose him to injury because he's too valuable. And his sense of everything we do, he and Malaluga, the extension of them from Paul to on that field in that huddle on Sunday is key to us. And so we'll continue to protect those guys as much as we can.
What is he allowed to do between now and when he comes back?
He can do everything.
He can.
Until he can't. Until he can't go play on Sundays or be in the stadium and do those things on Sundays.
So, he can do everything in preseason just once the season starts.
Yeah. It's just no need in my opinion. In my opinion, I am not going to play Vontaze Burfict
in
preseason.
I got you.
So.
What do you do with Vontaze through training camp? Do you rep him normal and back it off towards the very end? Or how do you handle that?
Just working, man. You know, obviously he's going to be out the first three games, so we got to still get him trained to do some of those things. Just like a year ago, I mean, missed the first eight games. So we got him weaned in towards the sixth, seventh week, whatever it was, before the Pittsburgh game. And he was only supposed to play 20 plays, and he ended up playing like 50 in that game. So we'll have a plan for him, he'll practice some in training camp. And then as the season goes, we'll just wean him in. Maybe he'll work on the scout team just to stay in shape. Well, I don't even think he's allowed to do that, actually. I don't think he's even allowed to practice, so it's not going to make
the week. Right.
So it's not an issue.
How good of a feel do you have now for what the plan will be without Vontaze, or is that one something that maybe we'll have to develop during camp?
Well, we won eight games without him last year, right. So the next guy's going to have to go play, whether it be one guy or fill in his spot or two or three. So, you know, just, you know, we got some guys there that can play, and I feel good about. And, you know, the good thing about it is when he comes back and he's able to go back in the lineup, we got guys with experience, so, you know, you might need down the road.
It's not necessarily a blessing, but how much it is.
No, it's not a blessing.
Just to use that term, though, but how much of it kind of is a blessing in disguise in the fact that you can get some of those guys like Marquise and some of these other guys?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, but those guys got to prove in preseason. We got to find out who the best, usually keep six linebackers, who the best six guys are. And then, you know, once we figure that out, like I said, it might be somebody plays a base for Vontaze, somebody plays a nickel. You know, it might be one or two or three guys. You know, so we'll just have to figure that out.
From what you saw from Vontaze in the spring, do you get the sense that this whole experience has changed him at all?
Oh, yeah. We've addressed it all, you know, throughout the spring. You know, one of the things I told him, I said, we're not going to change the way we play. What we're going to do is we're going to put our foot in the gas pedal, but we're going to be smarter in those situations. We have to understand that, you know, guys are – targeting you, targeting some players that they're going to try to get underneath your skin and try to do those type of things. So that's been my whole MO. It's like that we're not changing how we play. We're not changing our style how we play. We're going to be smarter situationally and emotionally.
You can coach technique and that kind of thing. Yeah. How do you coach emotion and drawing?
Oh, there's a lot of ways to do it. There's a lot of ways. I can get that Westerman kid after him in practice or whatever. I'm just saying. I can get somebody in practice. You know, I've done it before in the past. You know, one of the young rookie guys to get, you know, something like that just to test them. You know, it's but there's a lot of ways. You can take them through. You show them clips of different things, different sports, different situations that you can work through those things. So, you know, we're not all perfect, and you know, hopefully we'll learn from this lesson and we'll move forward.
It's big to be for him now to be aware of how maybe referees would view him differently. Do you feel? I mean, you've talked about that in the past, how that's mm-hmm. part of it, but maybe now more so now because of happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's unprecedented. You know, he's been suspended 3 games. I don't know if it's ever been done before for what he's being suspended for. But so obviously the league's making a statement. He's got to understand they're doing that, and it's, you know, he's going to have a red flag. So he understands that. He's a smart kid, and we'll move forward with it together.
All right, so there is Paul Gunther finishing up, talking about sort of managing the emotions and understanding that there's a big red flag on number 55 every time he goes out there, and understanding that people are going to be gunning for him to try to set him off.
Oh, yeah.
And that's life now.
Yep.
That's life for you now. And, of course, did sneak in the old, I'm pretty sure this is an unprecedented suspension for what he did. Just couldn't let it go. And that was pretty clear from everybody if you tried to dig a little bit deeper. I did enjoy it. Mike Brown saying, well, I own the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't own the Pittsburgh Steelers. So you can guess how I side on that conversation. Yeah, still pretty clear that nobody within this organization still feels anything happened very fairly as that suspension goes down, but it did nonetheless.
Yep.
How much do you worry about coaching emotion and passion from Vontaze? I mean, I remember Duke Tobin at the Combine talking about we just don't want to take his passion away. It's what we don't want to take that edge he plays with, though. I mean, how much do you concern yourself with coaching that? I mean, it's got to be at least some part.
I don't know, Paul. I don't know if they, as a coach, can really do anything about it. He's a grown man.
Yeah,
he's played this game for a long time, and so it's you know you could tell me later to not get mad at the thing I got mad about this week. But you know what? I'm telling you right now, I'm already mad about it. So like there's no so it's up to me. It's up to me. So therefore, you know what I mean? So I think all you can do as a coach, and it's up until this point when at the end of that last season when Marvin Lewis was thrown under bus by national media, you need to control these guys. It doesn't work that way. And especially when you're talking about how a person feels and in that whatever moment that is, yeah,
doesn't it kind of, but doesn't it work that way? I mean, can't you check a guy a little bit? I mean, you take away playing time, you take away whatever. I mean, if a guy does something, you get in his face. You don't excuse him to the media. You know, Vontaze has gotten a pass from Marvin.
Yeah. I guess
when every
it could
time
be.
He's done anything, it's been explained away. And it's always being blown out of proportion. It's never, yeah, he screwed up. He's got to learn to be better. He's got to be better than this. He's better than that. When have we ever heard that said? That's my only thing. So answer your question about how do you coach it, you know, I think at a certain point, you have to check it a little bit.
But then it's over. You know what I'm saying? I guess that's my thing, is because if you know, week four, someone hits them late 3 plays in a row and there's no flag and everyone's screaming and the coach is he hasn't done anything. But you see him getting angry. Do you bench him? Hey, then now he's ticked because he didn't do anything. Well, I see you looking crazy.
Yeah.
Or I think you're about to do something. So now you can't play. No, what happens then is, well, then he does something, and then what you're saying is then pull him off the field. Well, if you do something, A, you're flagged, and then you're suspended again. So something already has been done. I think at this point, this many years into his career, with the reputation he has now, where as a repeat offender in this league, where the suspensions are only going to get worse, it's really up to 55. Yeah, I see your point, Paul, but I think we're past that now.
The ship has sailed.
I think that's gone.
They cut him loose.
Yeah, I think I think that's gone. And that's a whole other conversation about whatever, you know. So I think in this moment, week four, right? That, you know, it's up to him.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. I mean, that it's too late to start doing that stuff. I can see that, but you know, there has to be some clarity that the stuff that has gone on is not going to be accepted. Not just I'm going to tell you not to do it. It's not going to be accepted in whatever way, shape. I mean, there has to be some sort of accountability to it, not just stop doing that stuff, but you're great. I don't know that that's going to necessarily be the case, and we won't know exactly what it'll look like until he gets out there in week four and starts being Vontez again.
Right.
I mean, you know, he brings a different dynamic and energy to the field that way. I mean, we talked about that a lot last year, where you went from this team that was floating along in a happy cloud to a 6-0 start, and Vontez Burfict showed up, and all of a sudden there was all kinds of controversy and crazy stuff happening.
Right.
Not that that was bad or good for the team as far as winning goes, but there's something to be said for a lot of distraction and stuff always being around like that. Let's move forward. We have a lot of time to talk about a guy that's not going to play until – yeah, what, October or whatever.
Yeah.
So Mike Brown comes out yesterday, does his media tour. We get the whole Mike thing, and very, you know, you can predict in a lot of ways the stuff that's going to be said. Sometimes he's very unpredictable, though. Sometimes he'll just fly off on certain topics. Like, he kind of went off on his own little thing on concussions yesterday, but you know, he's been known to do that as well. Him and Marvin Lewis are so tied at the hip, and this franchise winning a Super Bowl it's all that's left for either of them.
Yeah.
They've changed the narrative from what it was in the 90s.
Right.
They've done everything, and they hitched their wagons to each other, clearly. Yeah. You wonder what will happen, what that moment would be like. I can't even imagine such a thing.
Well, you know, last year Marvin said he would hand the trophy off and walk away.
Wait, no, he didn't. No, I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that.
And Mike, it was funny because you asked Mike, what would you say in that moment? And other than saying, I'd tell myself to be brief.
Yes. Well, he did. He in a long, it was a very great, long-winded way of saying, I'm going to be brief, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Mike, can you be brief?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I don't know that he can.
Yeah. No, you're right. It is. And you know what? I don't know how to say this. I like the fact that no one is afraid at this juncture to say the goal is to win the Super Bowl. That's all we have left to do. I mean, I understand there's, you got to win a couple playoff games to do that, but, you know, I don't know. I guess it comes. I look at other sports franchises where this franchise was in the not so distant past. It's further away now, but when the idea of winning a Super Bowl seems so ridiculous. Where I know you're having a hard time thinking about it now, but I mean, it's legit, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's like. And I like that they talk about it.
The idea of winning seven games was crazy to say in the 90s.
So I don't know. To me, it sounds weird to say. I like the fact that an owner and a head coach and a quarterback talk about winning the Super Bowl, but people have to know that doesn't happen all the time.
Yes.
There's only, you know, NBA, MLB, some of these other teams, they're not talking about winning championships.
Let me tell you something I tweeted that got a ton of reaction on Wednesday morning. And I should have known that it would get a bunch of reaction. I honestly wasn't trying to. I just said, I'm always amazed at how Mike Brown rarely receives credit from fans when things are going really well, but it's always the first name out of their mouth when something goes wrong. The second the Bengals lose to the Steelers, Mike Brown, right?
Something, yeah.
But you didn't hear his name the entire time they started the season 8-0.
Right.
Or it's just like if something goes wrong, it must be that guy's fault.
And he acknowledged that.
Absolutely he does.
Yeah.
I mean, but for that reason, I just – so many people say, well, it's just when you have 25 years since they've won a playoff game. Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Fair enough. They also have won as much as almost any team in football the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it. They won the playoffs. But and that's not my point. My point is during when they're making these regular season runs, no one talks about, boy, Mike Brown. But it's always the second something screws up, it's Mike Brown's fault.
Right. And actually, Marvin hears that.
Yeah.
You know, and he had he was, you know, Marvin doesn't really get fired up around us unless he's yelling at you in a press conference.
That's true.
but he was, you know, when I asked him specifically, hey, does this stuff get to you when you hear it about Mike? And not that he got fired up and I think we could play that audio. It was he doesn't – you'll hear it. It'll sound like Marvin. All I can tell you is the way he looked directly at me and the way – I don't know how to describe that. I mean, it you could tell that it wasn't just a head coach sort of paying lip service to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring that audio in. Here's Marvin Lewis with you talking about Mike Brown.
How do you look at that? 14 years together – obviously, the guy who brought you in is such a young coach, but now you're—I don't know—how has that developed and grown, and it's on a personal level.
I think that the one thing that I remember Tom Donahoe saying to me back in 2001 about the relationship that you should have the head coach with the GM, president, or owner. The owner, I think, is what he was saying, and I think. To me, that's been something that was impressed upon me then. I think we've had a really good relationship with Mike all the time. And like he said, sometimes the one thing that we've been consistent with is when we leave the room, we're kind of united on what we're going to do. And I think that's the key element for me is, right from the start, he wanted to make sure that I knew that I would be the voice of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Right.
And it's important that voice be consistent and constant, but that, the message that I deliver is a consistent message all the time, and it's a message that we've decided upon that way. So I've been blessed with that, that way. And that's a good thing. So anytime people ever ask me for advice, guys going into coaching situations, that's one of the things that I try to remind them of.
Was friendship, because he said it's a genuine friendship. He's like, is that a happy byproduct? I can't imagine, or was that part of Tom Donald's message? Was like,
well, he has entrusted me
to
get his football team to the Super Bowl. And so that's, we're partners in this. And that's huge, And he's, they take care of me and my family. I'm very fortunate to do what I do. I do something I love to do. We come and it's not like work. We come and have an opportunity each and every day to get better, and that's important and key. And so, he trusts me to make the decisions to help us get where we want to go.
I'm just finding out, on a personal level, does it bother you at all that he's still, like, he kind of relayed a story about a bumper sticker he saw that said, Mike Brown still stinks, and he's like, hey, if people want to kick me around, I'm still here.
I defend him all the time. People don't understand how important winning is to him. And I say that to people all the time, and they want to go back. They always want to go back to money. And I said, Mike Brown could care less about money. He doesn't want you to waste his money. That's what he doesn't want you to do. Don't waste his money. But whatever it takes for our football team to be successful, he's 100% on board with. And that's what I know of Mike Brown. So, and I know even prior to coming here, the consistent message I got from the people that worked here was it was an outstanding place to work.
Yeah, I mean, he has a very special relationship with Mike that I just don't think anybody really understands but the
no,
two of them.
No.
And no one could. And it's, right. That's not a knock on him at all. I'm just saying it's a unique relationship unlike any two people in ownership of sports. To hang with somebody for so long who has not
won
a playoff,
right? Because people would say, "Oh, Belichick and Kraft." It's like, no, it's not the same.
No, Kraft's like, I got all these rings. Life right. is good because of this right. guy. Marvin, life is good, better for
yeah,
Mike because of
better.
This guy. But it's loyalty and belief in what Marvin has been as a person, which takes me back to the story you wrote about him
yeah.
in our preview section last year about. You know, being about more than just a football coach. It's just very apparent how the tightness when you hear them talk about each other, you understand why they haven't moved on from each other.
Right. It was interesting because, you know, someone asked Marvin, "Hey, why have you been here for 14 years?" And he kind of looked. First of all, I don't know how you answered that question, but he said, "Well, I don't want to be anywhere else." And then, you know, Mike flipped it around and was like, "Well, let me ask you, why would I fire him?"
Yeah.
After all that's happened, and
did they say, "Well, he's 0-7 in the playoffs"?
Yeah, and he was just kind of like, "Well, you got to get there to lose those games." It's a weird, you know,
is there any team ever in the history of sports that has been in this weird situation like this?
It's very strange.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I know it's the number one question, and we spend all year discussing
right.
it. But can we just discuss how freaking crazy it is?
Yeah.
How to have a dynamic like this
yeah.
and the team is so good cannot win in this spot? You have to have a confluence of like a million different factors
right.
to make something this a run like this
right.
happen.
Yeah,
it all comes back to these two.
Right.
Mike's loyalty and patience more than anyone in all of sports.
Right.
And Marvin's dedication to rewarding that.
Right.
Has put the Bengals in this spiral.
Right.
This limbo.
Right.
But anyway,
it's fascinating.
It's fascinating, and that in their relationship is at the core of it. One thing you said earlier, I do want to break into: will Mike ever be beloved?
Yeah.
Do you? I mean, granted, I have more history in the town than you do, but you know it just as well, having studied it. I mean, do you believe that? Because I don't think so. I don't think anybody will ever say that about. Even if he wins, I mean, unless they run off a string of Super Bowls or something, I think he should be. But I think, you know, when you hear reaction, I just think people are just too burnt and have made up their mind. It's, you know,
yeah,
this city does that. I've made up my mind. That's who this guy is.
I think it's one of those things where it'll depend on the generations. I mean, young Bengals fans who know more, frankly, more winning than people our age who grew up through the late 80s and 90s. And you're like, oh, my, you know. I guess I don't have a great comparison. One I wanted to make was the Wirtz family in Chicago. I mean, Bill Wirtz was universally despised despite owning that team and winning Stanley Cup, you know. He passed away, his son took over, and now that name, that family name at least, is much more well-received. But Bill is still kind of like away from that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's others in his family. So I don't know. I think winning cures a lot, but I guess you're right, Paul. And maybe if he appeared a little more often and said and
to me it's strictly a marketing thing.
Yeah.
And anybody who was here when the stadium thing went down.
That's part of it. Yeah,
that deal and the way it all went down and the ruthless nature with which he was perceived while his team was epically awful was, I mean, you know, he was Mr. Burns.
Yeah. And well, here and that's why I say it could be generational, but also to me, Paul, if you win a championship and they're rolling through downtown on a parade, on a float, and he's on a thing, he's waving to everybody and everyone's cheering, the thing you tweeted the other day about he doesn't get the credit, I think all of that will come, because it's like there's the capper and it becomes, holy cow, yeah, you know, he was so, you know, and when he hired Marvin and realized he needed to change things, and takes a big effort to go from Jerry Jones to the hands-off owner. You know what I mean? I think, is that equal beloved? I don't know, but I definitely think something like that would turn a lot of, because it's a championship in Cincinnati. We're talking about what? Yeah. Big Red? I mean, you know.
We're talking about 1990.
Yeah.
The last, yeah, I mean, well, the Kelly Cup that the Cyclones won, of course. They won two Kelly Cups. One, yeah. I mean, this city was electric. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
But you're right. I'm coming from that sort of, you know, outside perspective. But
yeah.
I just
people discount it. People then will say, well, they won the Super Bowl because it was Katy and Duke Tobin and everybody else. Right. It's always when something good happens, it's always – I don't know. And does it matter? Probably not.
I don't think it matters to him.
I don't think it matters. And the idea of him as some sort of evil, frugal is quite frankly, unfortunately for everyone's perceptions, false. I mean,
yeah,
he's as loyal and kind-hearted as it comes, and that's his fault. And he doesn't want any giving to the community that he does to be known. That is the fault that he's perceived. It's just a marketing thing. If people knew all the money and things that he does for the city, it's probably more equal to what the Reds do. But the Reds are out there throw a parade every time they give $5,000 to the community fund. And what they do is fantastic. This is not about versus Bengals, but it's about two completely opposite ways of handling community business. You know, they could use a marketing director and someone to come in there and be like, well, let's connect with the fans a little more.
Yeah.
That's what they need. And maybe that's partly Mark's fault, but I don't hold it against him.
Like doing Ring of Honor.
Since we've talked about, yes, exactly.
Slip that one in there.
Hey. Hope everyone enjoyed the Ring of Honor series.
You go. See, that's where I was going at.
There you go.
Thank
you. It was a lot of fun. Putting it out there, and it looks like very possibly something is going to be happening with it. 50th anniversary next year. I do not deserve any credit for this. There was sort of a thought that maybe something like that might be in the works coming up in the future. We don't know anything for sure, but when asked about it, Mike said next year is the 50th anniversary, so I'm not going to say anything more about that, which kind of makes you think that, okay, sounds like next year they're going to try to maybe do something. So we'll see what that will be, how it will look. And everyone that wanted Ken Riley in and not Chad Johnson, I hear you. Please don't yell at me on Twitter. I'm sorry.
And that's not the thing I'm mad about this week.
Oh, it's not?
No.
It's not? All right, so here's the thing. Here's our segment. What's making Jim mad? Moment of the week. We need your help. So send us, hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on anywhere, email, send it to Instagram.
Just don't do Snapchat because I probably won't see it till like weeks later.
Yeah, and it'll be a story that I'm still trying to work on getting good
at. So don't do Snap. You can snap at us, but not for this.
No, no, no. Don't. We want to hear what a good opening intro would be for this every single week. I want a good sounder, something that we can intro the Jim, Why Is Jim Angry moment of the week. With some, it could be from a movie, it could be music, it could be just a general person screaming. If you have an idea, shoot it to us. Let us know what you think it is, and we'll take the best of those and work it in. Now, without an intro, what is making you mad this week, Jim?
You know, and people can relate to this, and you'll find this throughout the year. It's not going to be, most of the time, it won't be football related. You know, Paul, you know what? Really, you heard me getting mad about this earlier.
You know what really grinds my gears?
Yeah. Why does it take 9 miles for a truck to pass another truck on a two-lane road going 55 miles an hour?
Yeah.
And then when I look at my little map and I'm watching estimated arrival time, the clock ticks up.
You don't like that?
7 minutes longer, 8 minutes longer. I'm like, oh, my God. You don't understand. Like,
if you're a truck, and you want to get out into that other lane, you need to assume some responsibility and go.
Hit the gas.
Yeah.
Dude, Paul. Oh. I was really, really angry about it. I'm angry about it right now.
Yeah. How many minutes did it cost you, this one particular truck incident? Or is that we talking
about
multiple?
No, it's multiple. I mean, think about everybody. Okay, I drive kind of all over the place. So 65 through Indiana, two lanes. You know, where there's, I'm trying to think of construction on 7. Where is it there construction in and around Cincinnati?
This is true.
So any of these sort of areas where a truck is deciding, and it doesn't have to be the giant semi. It could be like the DOT truck or the dump truck or whatever. I would say I wasted another 35 minutes of my life just in the last 48 hours.
Because of trucks.
Because of trucks making, like, I'm going to pass and then hit the gas. Not passing. Oh, my God.
This is not good. And no. You are in, what's the name of your car? What kind
it's
of car
It's not
is
a
it?
Lambo. It's a Toyota Yaris.
It's a Toyota Yaris.
Which I still maintain I can drive around a couple members of D-Line in.
You could fit like 50 yards in those trucks. You're lucky these things don't just truck you. Just run you over.
Doesn't make me not mad about it.
No, understandable. You're mad. I get it. All right, we've got a few minutes. We've got about 10 minutes left here. Let's now that we've gotten that off your chest. I'm glad. I hope maybe this can be a therapeutic thing for
be
you.
Be cathartic, maybe. It's gonna I don't know, but you. See, then I get mad about it all over again.
All right, well, good. Maybe you'll be a little heated to talk about training camp. So training camp starts. Again, if you see us down there, holler at us.
Yeah.
Give us a BBP shout-out. Some things that we're looking for. What's the first thing that you're interested in watching as practices get started, particularly – let's just say padded practices.
Yeah.
The first few are going to be kind of like OTAs were until they really strap the pads on Monday.
Right. Mine has changed since you and I did our five top questions going into camp. I mean, it's kind of related, but with the news of Burfict missing not only the games but maybe some practices with the news of Ray Maluga starting camp on a non-football injury list, to me it's Paul Dawson, PJ Dawson. Mm-hmm. I want to see, you know, here's a kid who – the perfect comparisons were there all through the draft process, and we saw him look really good in some of those preseason games, but he never saw the field. There were issues, again, with grasping defense and the Monday through Saturday part of it, which, again, they knew about. Mm-hmm. They moved him. He was a weak side guy. Now he's on the strong side. What does that mean? I don't know. You know, but he's told me earlier he feels like he's picking that side up a little easier. Somebody's going to have to play that position, and he was drafted very highly for a reason. So yeah. To me, I want to see him be – is he good? Is he perfect light or whatever you want to call him?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think he's certainly one guy worth watching. I'm really interested in hearing why – coaches continue to just scream and rave about Cedric Obwehi.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about this. We did. We were in studio with Lance McAllister earlier this week for an hour, and I was talking about Cedric Obwehi and the fact that I have never had a conversation with a single Bengals coach about him where they didn't one-up whatever I said.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, you guys really liked him last year. No, we loved him last year. Okay,
right.
I guess he was really good. No, he was great. It's constant about how good they think this guy is. But we never seen him really play right tackle. Like, we haven't seen this.
And I'll let you finish your thought, but earlier this offseason, a Bengals coach used the name Anthony Munoz to me.
Wow.
When they talked about him.
Wow. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. And this was just, this is, you know, I mean, we didn't print that. It was just in conversation.
Yeah.
To your point.
Yeah.
I'm very curious.
But
I mean,
hear so much. I mean, we're at the point, we're expecting Anthony Munoz to come out through the
right.
way they talk about this guy. And
we're going to be wondering what happened to Michael Johnson.
Yeah.
right?
Michael Johnson just can't do anything.
Right. So, which, you know. You're right, man. I'm just – it is. Those second-year guys.
We've not seen him take really almost a single
right
meaningful snap at either tackle position, and I think the coaches feel like they have an all-pro on their
right.
hands or something. You know, so, well, I just – I'm a believer of prove it on Sundays.
Right.
I hear too much coach chatter, and I hear too much, you know, maybe it's just like combine reflux. Like I just get like acid reflux from combine stuff about measurables and bendiness and waist. No. Show me a guy that dominates on Sundays playing the position. And we have not seen that from him yet. I'm just curious what the heck that's going to look like because we didn't get to see him during preseason last year. He came in and played in like jumbo packages and they never put him in over top Andre Smith or anything. So I'm curious to see what that looks like.
Yes.
What else? Andrew Billings.
Yeah, I agree with you that he's an interesting guy because of the power and the sort of, you know, talking about Mini Perfect, and he's like, he's not Mini Geno, but he's like, and he's not Geno Light, so I guess Geno Clone. Fine.
I don't put him in the Geno Clone category. He's Domantas Peko replacement.
Ah, there you go. Okay, yeah. Because you're right. He doesn't have the pass rush.
He's the big,
part,
powerful, lateral moving run stopper that Domantas Peko is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and, you know, some people are listening right now yelling, no, he sucks. That guy's terrible. I know fans have been fed up because the analytics people tell you should be fed up here for a while. But
that'll be hard to see, though, in a lot of ways.
If he's blowing people up off the line, if he's backing people up that don't know
if
who
he does
is,
well, if he does that to Clint Bowling or Kevin Zeitler, two really good, really powerful interior linemen, then that's eye opening, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, but I
and
you
it's
know,
possible. Right. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's one of the, I mean, supposedly as strong as it comes.
Yeah.
So we'll see. You know, I'm just curious to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
What else?
Finally, for me, I guess in that regard, will be the back end of the receiver room, and not so much Tate and Alford and the special teams, all that stuff. I want to see if you know, is Cody Core anything? Is Jake Coomer ready to take a step? Touchdown, Jesus! you know, I liked Alonzo Russell. I mean, he might be a practice squad guy. The kid out of Toledo looks the part. I mean, I'm interested to see those guys catch passes and see if, you know, the Bengals found something, I guess.
Yeah.
Just because I like Lamar positions.
Yeah.
I like to see guys catch footballs and score touchdowns. Yeah. So that you work on the pancake blocks and, you know, whether he moved to do 4 yards, I will, you know, get
you're a
some
ballet
good
guy.
Twitter video.
You're a ballet guy.
Hey, man, you know what?
You like the ballet.
It's beautiful.
You know, I will say next, I think one other thing that I am curious to see, not that we're going to see anything new, but I do think it's interesting, is Dre Kirkpatrick versus Darqueus Dennard. Now, both will play this year. I mean, both are going to play in the majority of the time. The Bengals were in, you know, 3DB, were in the, at least in the nickel. Yeah, probably. I think there was like 65% of the time last year, so that means all three of them would be out there. But that 35% then, one of those two guys is coming off the field.
Right.
So I'm kind of curious to see who's going to win that battle. I mean, Dre played okay last year. Mm-hmm. They want to see better. Darqueus is still a big shoulder shrug.
Yep.
I mean, he got hurt as soon as he was having a chance to really go play. I mean, he wishes he would have had opportunity. Injuries have just been coming in inopportune times for him. The dude was a first-round draft pick 3 years ago. This year and next year are supposed to be probably his two best years in the league if you go by the way this league works.
Right.
And we don't even know who he is. So is he going to come in and suddenly be a shutdown guy? It's possible.
Yeah.
And we're not even talking about, you know, Will Jackson.
Right.
Or Josh Shaw, who's still around. I mean, there's just a lot happening there, and I think a lot to be learned there, particularly from Darqueus, Will Jackson, and Josh Shaw. So that'll be fun to watch. So those receiver guys going up against these, you know, there'll be the ballet will be great.
Yeah.
Everybody's ballet will be fantastic.
Jake Coomer will catch a touchdown, though.
Yeah, that's everyone catches touchdown because they don't tackle you. Yeah, you just keep running.
You know what?
And he does. I'm telling you, you know, he's kind of become this joke thanks to you and Mo Egger. Mo, who just loves to make jokes about the fact that everyone loves Jake Coomerow.
Yeah.
Jake Coomerow has played pretty darn well at receiver.
After his BVP, I might have to reshare that story from last year where Adam Jones and Dre, and I mean, those DBs love him.
Yeah. Yeah, bring it back.
Largely because he catches passes on them and fights.
Yeah.
You know, he's not just a clown running around out there. I mean,
he's really quick off the line. He's good on releases, and he's 6'5", 207 pounds. He's got good hands.
Right.
We hardly ever see him drop passes. Is he gonna hit the burners and blow people away on a deep ball?
No,
but he can get off the line and make a cut in the middle and bring in the catch. That's a valuable thing to have.
Yeah. So that's interesting to me, that back end.
He could be your fourth receiver. Right?
Could be. Yeah.
Sure.
Hey, you need a guy who gets open and is going to catch it.
Who's the fourth receiver? Who's the fourth receiver except for him? I mean any of those guys, right?
Yeah, that's a whole other.
But is there somebody who you look at, you're like, "Oh, they're definitely better than Kumerow?" Hell no.
Right.
You can't say that. And that's part of the situation, but
right.
I mean, he's probably a front runner to be there. Which is a crazy thing to say, but it's pretty wide open. All right, let's end this. We need music. We need music to go out. So what do you think? Do you have anything?
Well, you know,
I feel like fresh start. Maybe we should just play all Naughty by Nature all the time, Jim. Would you like that?
No.
It's because you're a hater.
I'm not hating on.
No, yeah, you don't like. They're too happy for you.
I'm hating on.
They're too happy for you.
I understand that I don't know. I'll let you roll with it.
All right.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do Naughty by Nature. I'm not going to do Naughty by Nature. I think anything about us being back, you know what I mean? Like, now, there's a lot of songs about that. There's like, you know, you can go some old school rock, like Back in the Saddle.
Right.
You know, there's the T.I. I'm Back. There's the Eminem I'm Back, the Slim Shady song. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you can go.
You know, if you want to pull out some old school Aerosmith, that works.
I feel okay with that.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I like Aerosmith.
Yeah, you there's no hate over here.
Old Aerosmith.
No, not for Aerosmith.
No, I mean I'm not listening to the Armageddon soundtrack.
No, bring it like that old. Oh yeah. Steven Tyler.
Dream On, Sweet Emotion. Yeah. I mean, all that stuff is fantastic. So
Back in the Saddle works.
Back in the Saddle, I feel like, plays for us. So we're going to have that since we're back. And we're now on the run. So once a week, from now until God knows what happens in January or earlier or later.
February, maybe.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I'm going to do that to you.
Don't start this.
I'm doing it to you.
Don't start all this.
Will the Bengals win a playoff game in 2016? No,
how many times over the course of a year do we get asked that question? Is the question. Is this the year they're going to win the playoff game? Hey, but can we blame anybody? We just spent 7 minutes talking about that earlier in this podcast. So it's really on us. All right. Aerosmith is here. Steven Tyler, still alive.
Yeah.
Still alive. He might be in some Deadpool stuff. I got nothing but love for Steven Tyler. I hope he lives forever.
Yeah.
I hope he lives forever.
He's not in my Deadpool.
He's lived a hard life. He's not?
Nope.
He's lived a hard life. Well, I love you, Steven, so go ahead and take us out. Aerosmith, reminding you that we are back in the saddle again, and we will talk to you next week.
Crazy horse alone.